Hey everyone, welcome back to the Deep Psychology Podcast. I'm Ross, and today we're going to continue talking about spiral dynamics stage blue. So this is part two of my episode on this topic. Part one I released last week, and I'd really recommend you go back and listen to that 36 minutes of insights into spiral dynamics stage blue. Here we're going to go more into the fine details of this stage, and it's going to get you a really solid understanding of what spiral dynamics blue is and why it exists, how to identify it in yourself, how to integrate it, how to see it in the world around you, and so on and so forth. This is a Deep Psychology Podcast. I'm your host, Ross Edwards, writer, meditation teacher, founder of deep-psychology.com, and avid lover of all things psychological. In listening to this podcast, you're part of the worldwide deep psychology community of tens of thousands of people undertaking profound personal transformation. You can join us on any of the major podcasting platforms and make sure to visit the site deep-psychology.com for lots of high quality resources. Let's get started. Recently, I've been teaching the worldviews theory in my classes, in my psycho-spiritual classes. And it's been really interesting to see that people get this stuff. When they hear about traditional and modern and postmodern, or they hear about blue and orange and green, they really get it. And the world starts to make more sense to them. And this is something that, as part of my new psycho-spiritual approach, that I'm really bringing in. I'm bringing in a lot of theory to help us, to help inform our understanding of the world. And so we're growing in our worldview, we're growing in our psychology, in our ability to metabolize different worldviews, not just spiritually. You know, we're working on both axes now. So if you want to be part of that, you do come and check out my classes and coaching at deep-psychology.com. I'd be really glad to work with you. So let's continue with this discussion of spiral dynamics stage blue. Now, we came last week to a little bit of an intro to what it's like to be in blue as an individual, what blue looks like in individuals. And here we're just going to go deeper to begin with. That's what we're going to do. We're going to go deeper into what blue looks like in individual people as opposed to collectives. And as I said last week, we talk about worldview, psychology, and values when it comes to any stage of spiral dynamics. In my opinion, spiral dynamics doesn't just cover values, as people often say. It actually covers worldview, psychology, and values. So let's talk about worldview. I guess one of the core themes of the blue worldview is that there is a transcendent God, and you know, one God. It tends to be monotheistic worldview, and the God tends to be male. If you look at the monotheistic religions that have a kind of sort of human-like God, that it's mostly male, vast majority, if not all, are male. And, you know, we could debate the reasons for that. I guess one reason is that because in blue societies, men tend to have a more dominant social position. That's just a fact of human history. And how that relates to us is that we tend to see ourselves as this kind of citizen of God's kingdom. It's like God is number one. God is looking out over our land, protecting us and telling us what to do and telling us what is right and what is wrong. And I am a citizen in that. And my job is to be good and to follow the truth of what is written in the Bible, what is written in my holy text. We typically believe that this God and the sacred texts that define what the God prescribes for us, that this God knows everything, and it knows how we should live. And we do not attempt to question this whatsoever, which stands in stark contrast to later stages where we realize that actually the truth can be questioned, and actually we're always continually upgrading our standards and our morality and so on. At Blue, it's not really like that. It's like there is one set of truths and that's it, and it's laid down by a divine authority. Now, as I said last week as well, I said a lot of things last week, is that I didn't have a religious upbringing. And so you might not have had a religious upbringing, and you might be wondering, well, Ross, I didn't ever have this worldview, and I don't think I ever will. Well, you know, you can substitute the word God for sort of the order of things. Even if we all go through Blue, and in Blue we have a very firm sense of right and wrong, and it takes on this very strong moral importance, and it seems to be set by some kind of authority. Now, if you're not, if you're, say, a secular Blue person, you might, the authority might just be, you know, the school, or it might be the sort of, you know, the local institution, it might be the city, it might be the country you live in, you know, but the point is that you see these rules and these sort of commandments as always true, and they must be followed in all of this. And that you feel a very strong sense of guilt if you don't follow them. So it doesn't necessarily need to be a god. It doesn't need to necessarily be a religious worldview. But a lot of the time it is. And even if it's not, it kind of takes on religious importance. This kind of belief or this view that we have that things are organized in a certain way and we must follow that way. Here we kind of see that right is right. So it's no longer might is right. Might is right is really a red phenomenon in previous stages. Now we're sort of sick of power games and power struggles and, you know, just expressing our raw impulses and trying to sort of get dominate and win out over other people. We actually want to fit in. We want to live as upstanding citizens. We tend to see our country as valuable and important. And this is a good thing, but it can also be a blind side, because we can often form such a strong identity with our country that we cannot see its dark side, we cannot see its blind sides, we cannot see the negative sides of it, and we become a bit of a true believer. And at Blue, we tend to not be able to see that. Here we kind of separate the world into good and evil. Good is basically the people who are like me, that share my values and live the way I do and, you know, follow the same religion that I do. And evil is pretty much everyone else. At this stage, there's a very strong sense of us versus them. This is one of the defining features of this stage. And it's one of the defining features that this stage manifests on a collective level, like in war and in sort of armed conflict and so on, and in religious war and so on, that it's us versus them. You know, it's my nation against the other nation, it's my religion against the other religion, and so on. We tend to think that we've fallen from paradise. And this is of a religious idea. Again, it doesn't need to be religious, often it is. But there's this basic sense that we were once kind of in the holy world. We were once in a perfect world. And at some point we fell into ignorance, and we started expressing our raw impulses, and we started acting inhumanely, and we started acting uncivilized, and our job is now to slowly go back there by following the rules and by, you know, living according to God's word and being good citizens. And we tend to think that in the afterlife, literally in the afterlife, that we will be back in paradise. Here we really put a lot of importance in our country, our religion, and in our race. Really, in sort of local and national containers of identity, we take we put a lot of stock in them, and we also derive our identity from them. So in Really Strong Patriots, for example, the biodynamic stage blue is usually expressing itself in people who believe that their religion is the only right religion, in people who are racist, people that are even like sexist and chauvinistic is expressing a sort of blue us versus them mentality. And I don't say that to put, I know that racism is no longer accepted in by most people. And I don't say racism to kind of tarnish all of stage blue as being racist, because that's probably an exaggeration. But you have to realize that racism is fundamentally sort of an us versus them attitude, and that is grounded in stage blue. And only with the appearance of Origin Green on a collective level has this stuff really become repulsive to us. It kind of divides the world into two. It divides the world into people who believe what I believe, people who do what I do, people who see things the way I do, my chosen people, and the out-group, people who live differently, people who live in different countries, people who don't believe in God, people who don't live according to my moral standards. It kind of struggles to see differences in people and to comprehend why they are, why those differences are there. And it just kind of tarnishes people who are different with the same brush and say, well, those people are weird, they don't deserve my consideration. Again, us versus them. And to conclude this little section on worldview, there is faith-based explanations for events, disasters, miracles, and so on. So unlike in modern times where we tend to rely on science and sort of logical explanations for things like the weather and natural disasters and so on, at this stage, that's not really not how people see the world. They see it as, you know, the work of God. They see it as God's wrath or a miracle of God or the hand of God. They haven't yet got the scientific mindset online to appreciate rational explanations for things. All right, so let's move on to psychology. What does the psychology of a blue individual look, or like a blue dominant individual look? Well, first of all, it's concrete operational thinking. Now, this is quite an involved topic. If you want to learn more, I would search for it. But what concrete operational means is the easiest way to understand it is that we can understand how things relate to one another. We have sort of a sense of causality. We can think of terms of cause and effect, but we cannot yet make abstractions. And so people at Blue, you know, they aren't yet into the scientific frame of mind of sort of analyzing multiple variables and comparing and thinking abstractly and thinking hypothetically. It's a bit more basic than that. And this explains why often, you know, scientific minded people and more faith oriented people, just their thinking seems so different. And often scientific people sort of take umbrage with this because they wonder, well, how can they think so simply? And you have to realize that their actual mechanism of thinking isn't as developed as the scientific mentality is. It really cares about its groups, as we know. So this is like a really strong part of the blue psychology, is its sense of being part of a nation, its sense of feeling very proud of that, of being part of a religious community, of being a Christian or a Muslim, for example. It really takes pride in this, rather than, say, taking pride in living life a certain way or being a scientific person. It's more about the community and about the group and what the group stands for. Here there is temperance, there is self-control, there is dignity. We are repressing our drives, our impulses, because often these drives and impulses are not condoned by religious authorities and by strict sets of rules and so on. And so we present quite a sort of clean and polished front. And often, in fact, this creates a lot of shadow. It creates a lot of repressed psychological material because we might repress our drives, but it doesn't mean we don't have them. We feel a lot of guilt because we really do not want to violate the rules, the commandments for how to live properly. And when we do break them, it's not just like a little mistake. It's not just like, oh, well, I'll get up and I'll try again. I'll try better the next time. Or it's not like, oh, well, I don't really care about the rules because, well, fuck the rules. They're a load of nonsense anyway. And I'm just going to do my own thing. No, you see, rules sit at the very core of our psyche in this stage. And we feel a lot of guilt because we feel like we're not living up to our standards, like our moral standards. We feel like we're failing as a citizen, as a child of God, and all the rest of it. I've observed in sort of blue-oriented people that there's quite a lot of uptightness. It's like they don't want to swear, they don't want to talk about certain topics, they don't want to say things that are compromising, they don't want to... It's like they want to be nice and clean and nice and kind of proper, right? Which is a good thing, but it can also be a bad thing. We tend to respect the elderly and authority figures and the elders because we sort of see these people as being the authority of sort of the groups we're part of the school, of the workforce, of the community and so on. It's like there's blue thinks very hierarchically. It thinks in terms of who's at the top and who's at the bottom, and everyone is in their right and just place. And if everyone sticks to that, then that's how we're going to, you know, that's the best way to live, is through these hierarchies. It tends to derive morality from external sources rather than from within. So a good example of this is like the Ten Commandments. You know, if you're beyond blue as a person, you might fundamentally agree with some of the things the Ten Commandments says. You know, it's not okay to lie, it's not okay to covet, it's not okay to all the rest of it. But you might be looking at it and saying, well, why do people need rules for that? And the thing is that at a certain point in your development, you do need strict rules. And that's sort of what you respond to, because you're looking for that structure, you're looking for that sense of direction, and it fits with the black and white sort of blue psychology. And there isn't enough sort of psychological complexity for the person to kind of weigh up their own values and weigh up their own moral standards and sort of compare them and say, well, is this always legitimate? Is this always feasible? Is this always the right thing to follow? It doesn't really think like that. It just thinks yes and no and black and white, and we do this and we don't do that, end of story. And this is something that we're inculcated with in school. This is kind of how school works. You know, you can never speak back to the teacher. You can never, there's many rules, and we're not really allowed to question them. This stage is very literal in terms of its knowledge and its sources of truth. So this is kind of where religious fundamentalism is grounded, and I've mentioned this before, that blue, again, is concrete operational. So if you give it a statement, it will either agree with that statement or it will disagree. And it doesn't really have a chance of weighing it up and being hypothetical and doing thought experiments on it. It's concrete operational. If you come along and say, well, Jesus performed this miracle and, you know, Jesus was literally resurrected and all of this, it'll just take that. It'll take that sort of reality and it'll just believe in it, literally, because that's the concrete operational mind. That's what it does. And so knowledge is gained through basically belief and literal interpretation. Now to us, to maybe a more advanced mind, it looks like belief. But what you have to realize is that this person tends to receive knowledge from outside, and it doesn't really have the capacity to churn it over yet. So it looks like belief, but to them, it's that's not really what it's like from the inside. So it's just something to keep in mind. Although, having said that, recognizing that this stage works on sort of belief and literal interpretation, it gives you many, automatically it shows you what the stage is, and it helps you see it in the culture. Values of this stage. What are the core values? Playing by the rules, conformity, submission. Behave now to gain later. One's own nation or group or community. Family, church, country, nation. That which authority or my surround values. Heritage, lineage. Anti-immigration, anti-abortion, anti-LGBTQ. And basically pre-modernity. It basically values pre-modern values. It doesn't understand modern values, and it doesn't understand post-modern values even less. This is what it typically values, is one's own conformity, submitting to authority, living as we should live. There's only this one way to live, and all other ways are stupid and wrong, and we need to repress those other ways. So let's look now at the collective aspect of blue. As I said in last week's episode, I often don't think collective and individual are separated very well. They are not separate, but when we're presenting these ideas, it's good to separate them out. So first of all, I want to say that in terms of where does blue show up in the world, I've heard from several sources that it makes up about 70% of the world's population. 70% of the world's population is basically dominant blue, right? So that's, you're not going to be short of blue examples of blue worldwide if you look out for them. And actually about 40% of the United States is center tier, particularly sort of in southern states and more conservative states. This is where you'll find a lot of blue. Blue appeared historically with the rise of our agriculture. And one specific invention, which you might be surprised at, seems to have driven really the appearance of blue societies. And that was the invention of the plough. And I won't go into the details, but basically the plough allows more efficient farming. It allows fields to be re-cultivated year after year, and it causes bigger surpluses, and therefore allows larger, more stratified societies. And this is where, around the time where the plough was invented and societies started to make use of it, that's when we had things like big societies spanning many continents. We had the rise of empires, the early empires. We had sort of more complex legal systems. We had rulers, and we had monotheistic religions appearing, which is, that is the collective expression of blue. In the modern day, it typically sort of dominates in the Middle East, in Asia, in Africa, although Africa might even be more red at the moment still, and in sort of possibly in South America, and also if you're looking at sort of democracies and the more developed countries, it typically dominates sort of in rural areas, in older generations, and in people who are less educated. One very good example of blue collectively is what is called Hammurabi's Code. Now, this was like I can't remember what empire it was, and I do apologize for that, but in one of the first empires where we had like monotheism, we had like a strong ruler that was ordained by God, and we had, the plough underlied the mode of production and so on. Hammurabi's Code was one of the first sort of legal documents to govern people's behavior, and it's basically a set of 282 strict rules for how to live. And it really covers, it covers so many aspects of life. And it's really interesting to look at that code because it shows you the blue mindset very clearly. We see blue in sort of punitive measures for dealing with crime. And listen, in human, this is something we don't appreciate in modern day. We tend to think that, oh, well, prisons are kind of inhumane and capital punishment is inhumane and all the rest of it. We need to rehabilitate people. People have made a mistake, blah, blah, blah. Well, listen, in the past, people used to get tortured. People used to get hung in public. People used to get their limbs chopped off if they committed the wrong crime. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. And this is kind of how blue enforced its, you know, this is how blue societies enforce their rules, is through strict punishment. We see blue in ideological war. Remember, us versus them. Things like the Palestine-Israel conflict, which at the time of recording is very much in the public eye, is, I would argue, mostly it's a blue-driven war. It's us versus them. It's my religion against yours. You know, it's Judaism against Islam. It's, you know, the Israelites are going to win out over the Palestinians. And they basically both do not understand each other. And the basis for all of this is really sort of, it's patriotism and it's religious affiliation and it's like, you know, the historic side of it with territory and so on. It's a very blue conflict. And in fact, war only really ends at the end of blue. War has only really started to diminish in recent times with the rise of orange and the rise of economies, and countries will compete with each other economically rather than go to war with each other. We see blue in big empires that basically their goal was to get bigger through conquering other countries. Again, it relies on agriculture, advanced agricultural techniques to have such a big surplus to generate the money required for a military and for like complex governance and so on. But fundamentally, it's an us versus them. It's I'm going to go in there, I'm going to kill the natives and I'm going to take what they have. Right, that's how green looks at it. Blue looks at it as well. We're just, you know, we're the right, we're the chosen people, we're the group, you know, we're the ones that are in charge, we're the ones that are going to dominate the world. We see it in conservatism, like people with their foot on the brake, people that are suspicious of science, people that are suspicious of egalitarianism and inclusion and so on. We see it in totalitarianism in quite an extreme form. That's a bit of an oversimplification. Totalitarianism is pretty red as well in many ways, but blue is certainly there in totalitarianism. Fundamentalist religion, as I've mentioned, the mixture of church and state is a kind of blue organization, except they didn't probably see it like that, because to realize that church and state are mixed, you need to separate them. So they probably didn't see it like that. They just thought, well, okay, state is divinely, you know, it has divine authority, so it's gonna, you know, it's gonna rule based on what God is telling us to do. And the two are really not separated at all. We see it in America in the Bible Belt, in God and country people, in, you know, people who like their guns and their God and their traditional ways of living. They don't want immigration, they don't want abortion, they don't want gay rights and so on and so forth. This is blue right here. We see it in the Inquisition. Again, this might sound like a very extreme example, but it's us versus them, it's religious, it's based on, you know, we have the truth, those other people don't have the truth, we're going to exterminate them. If we don't exterminate them, we're basically perpetuating evil. They are perpetuating evil in existing, so we're going to take them out. The church is the perfect example of blue, because it's all based on it's all based on mythic and literal interpretations of the Bible. I mean, listen, you can be a Catholic or a Christian and not be blue and not necessarily interpret the teachings literally, but usually this is what happens, and sometimes that leads to a lot of good, and but sometimes it gets people trapped in the stories and in the myths, and they perhaps don't see that there's a more metaphorical thing happening here. All right, so let's switch now to a very important topic, which is integrating blue. So we've talked a lot about the characteristics of blue individually and collectively, and I think you've probably got quite a good handle on it now. I want to talk now about integrating blue. Stages never die within us. Once we've downloaded a stage, so to speak, once we've been through the dominant phase, it actually lives on inside us, and we can either repress it, or we can remain addicted to it, or we can just stay there. Now, if we've gone beyond it, if we've gone into orange, we've gone into green or yellow, how do we integrate it? And this is a very crucial question, and one that is actually very difficult for orange people, you know, scientific, rational, achievement-oriented people. And it's really, really difficult for postmodernists because, you know, the sort of green, sensitive, multicultural, egalitarian people just do not understand blue. And I guess, first of all, I'd ask you to try and just understand blue on its own terms. Even if your natural reaction is to kind of be allergic to blue for all of its downsides, I want you to understand it on its own terms, and I want you to start to look at the good sides of blue. And the thing is that you actually operate from blue as well. You probably just don't realise it. In pushing off against blue, you might think that you've kind of left it behind completely, and there will be things you have left behind, but there'll be things that live on in you, and there'll be things that you've repressed and that you need to reintegrate into your character. So let's look at some of the positive blue points that we can take forward, perhaps without the ethnocentrism, perhaps without dividing the world into us versus them, perhaps without thinking that my country and my people are the best, perhaps without being like addicted to the rules and needing to follow in things and needing to be like this uptight, you know, kind of perfect citizen and all the rest of it. Allegiance and loyalty. Discipline, structure, planning and organizing. Self-sacrifice, service to others. Repetition and dedication. Loyalty to a higher goal. Following the rules, being an upstanding citizen. Identifying with a lineage or a discipline. Healthy national pride. Pride in our gender. Connection with home and hearth. Understanding why your country is as it is. Habit, routine, time management. So just to sum that up, basically what happens at blue is that we are in service to something bigger than ourselves. Often it's God or a religious institution. We are kind of sort of anal. We're quite sort of anal, and we're you know, everything needs to be neat and tidy and categorized and black and white. And we like following the rules. We like fitting in, and we very much take a lot of pride in who we are, in our identity as, say, a Brit, as, say, a supporter of this political party or that political party, or as, you know, or any kind of affiliation like that. And I just ask you to think about these things very carefully and to say, well, you know, do I actually have a sense that my life is worth something? Because at orange, this gets flushed out of us, because Orange basically says, no, there is no God, there is no overarching moral structure, there is no right way to live this. This thing is not a divine plan. This thing is just random atoms. You know, the world is just atoms. Life is just random. It was a result of random collisions and accidents over the course of billions of years. And we can lose that completely. And at Green, we just become so cynical and so kind of allergic to the status quo and to government and to society that we just feel cast off, and we just feel like totally disillusioned. And I think to live at higher levels of development, we need to learn how to reintegrate this sense of our life means something bigger, and that we're going to sort of, in a sense, sacrifice ourselves to that. Obviously, that can go too far, but a certain degree of self-sacrifice. And this is actually a very beautiful thing. It's kind of like, I've never been a parent, but I'm trying to sort of put it into understandable terms. If you're a parent, you'll realize how much self-sacrifice is involved. Because, and I've heard so many people saying this, that your life is no longer yours. Now, again, that can be taken too far, but that's what I'm talking about here. It's like your life is not just about you, and isn't that a beautiful thing? Your life is about this young person that you're bringing up. So that's something that we can repress as we move into higher levels. And I just ask you to think about that and to contemplate that and to ask, well, do I actually have that in my life? Another thing is like national pride, of pride in who we are, pride in our heritage, pride in like a lineage that we follow, or, you know, a certain kind of school of thought. This is something that at Blue we're really identified with, possibly too much, you could argue. But again, we tend to flush it out. You know, at Orange, it just becomes kind of irrelevant. It's like, well, it doesn't really matter where you're from. You know, we're all connected by the internet, and we're all, you know, we can all speak English, and, you know, it doesn't really matter. We can travel anywhere in the world, and we have social mobility. So what does it matter? And at Green, patriotism just becomes kind of disgusting, because we just see that throughout human history, patriotism has actually caused a lot of mess, and we become very sensitive to that. But you might realize that not having a sense of patriotism, a healthy sense of patriotism, is actually creates this big hole in your psyche. The patriotic part of yourself that was once there has been sort of shunned and divided and sort of pushed down. And I think we've got to rehabilitate that. And at Green, once you're at Green, it's kind of hard to be patriotic. You know, you tend to focus on the negative parts of your country, on how it exploits people, on how it lies, on how politicians are corrupt and all the rest of it. But I would just ask you again, you know, what are you proud of? It doesn't have to be the flag. It doesn't have to be the wars that they won and of what countries they conquered and, you know, the kings and the queens. It can be more things like the cuisine or the culture, or, you know, the landscape or anything, or the legitimate contributions the country has made to the world, right? And this is something I think we want to bring back, as if we want to be full people, if we want to integrate all these stages. And again, final thing is this idea of being like disciplined and structured and having habits and routines. Because this is kind of a Blue thing, you know, following the rules, going along with it, you know, having clear structures, clear directives and so on. And again, it's interesting because I notice a lot of like the self-help gurus now, a lot of their thing is like discipline and time management and habits and so on. And a lot of it's aimed at young men. And I just wonder, you know, is our tech addiction, and is our lack of purpose in life, and is our, and I mean that as a collective phenomenon, not just an individual phenomenon, and other factors at the moment, you know, like the fact that for young people in the West, it's actually getting kind of difficult to start a life. whether this is making us very bummed out and we're just like, well, why even bother? You know, what's the point in trying to make something of myself? Because I feel like all these factors are against me. And it can put you into a negative state, and it can put you into a state where you're not being very productive, and it just, you're in a slump, you're in a bit of a rut. And I think it's something we've, in general, not just young men, everyone we find hard nowadays is, you know, habit and routine and structure and discipline and so on, because we're bombarded with information, we're bombarded with entertainment more than ever. And, you know, we're in a very hedonistic culture in the West particularly. And so with Blue, I think one thing that Blue does is it's good at compartmentalizing our animal impulses and saying, no, this is not what I want to be doing. I want to be following the rules, and I want to be having this routine and these structures. They don't have to be religiously imparted or prescribed. They can be personal things, but this is just a crucial aspect of building the life that you want and living life how you want it and being fulfilled and, you know, getting shit done and, you know, following through on projects and having fulfilling hobbies and all the rest of it and, you know, eating healthy and getting your exercise and all the rest of it. And the sort of Blue mindset is a nice pointer to that. All right, everyone. So I think we have pretty comprehensively covered the Blue structure. On my website, you can find a whole host of articles about spiral dynamics. Just go to the spiral dynamics series in the tools section to learn more. And you can also look at my podcast episodes, just my recent ones, actually. I've been talking a lot about the spiral dynamics stages. Last week, I did the part one to this episode. A couple of weeks ago, I did spiral dynamics stage green, my experience of green from the inside. I did last month spiral dynamics orange and turquoise. So yeah, go and check that out. And listen, stick around. Please leave a review on the platform that you use to listen to this, preferably Spotify or Apple. And I really encourage you to stick around for June, July and August. I'm going to have two episodes per week. One is a repost and one is a brand new episode on a Thursday. So please stick around. And of course, join me for classes and coaching if you really like what I do and you'd want to go deeper with this work. All right, I'm Ross. Thanks a lot for tuning in and I will see you next time. Thanks for listening. If you liked this episode, please leave a review. And if you'd like to get in touch, you can email me at ross@deep-psychology.com. If you'd like to go deeper, head to deep-psychology.com for articles, courses, ebooks, and one-to-one coaching. Thanks for joining me, and I'll see you soon.